The TV Dudes podcast, recorded on September 15th, 2014. Amazon Prime pilots. So this is episode 2 of our newly rebooted podcast. And actually, the word in is that it was well received. Everyone really liked that we did this.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just keep it going. Like this whole three-part structure.
We need to have Grant. We should have had like quotes, you know, from people that like
Entertainment Weekly style.
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly says a TV Dude smash reboot. Just make them up.
I would like to say I liked it better.
You liked
listening
it better?
Listening to it myself was like, hey, we sound pretty good.
We sounded professional.
I thought so.
I also did editing on us.
That's what made us sound so good.
Tighten things up.
That's right.
Take out all
this
those.
This probably won't even appear on the show, will it?
No. All of this is gone. Once again, if you guys have questions, you can email us at mail@thetvdudes.com. Send us your questions. We'll answer some on the show. And also, if you guys could go to the iTunes store and go to the podcast for the TV Dudes and give us a 5-star review, that really helps out the show. Go there, give us 5 stars, tell us why we're awesome, or tell other people, rather, why we're awesome, and we'll also read that on the show.
And we will download us, too. I was going to say, we'll download free, just like U2's album, too.
Also,
which,
yeah.
Nobody
make,
liked.
Make sure, give us 5 stars, because if you give too many 4-star reviews, Grant gets fired.
Oh, no.
It's the way it is. It's just like when they tell you those surveys at restaurants and stuff, like, well, make sure and give me a 5-star review, because if I get 2 or 3 3-stars, they'll fire me. It's the same way. If we get 4 stars, they have to beat me to death with shovels.
He's also graded by if you buy the appetizers.
Yeah, that's true.
Guys,
yeah.
Please, I need this. Buy the appetizers.
That's right. If you don't order the sausage balls, the TV Dudes might get canceled.
Can you please get something more than water and chips? All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to the news, Randy.
All right, so we got a few bits of news here today. First of all, people have been clamoring for this one for a while. HBO is said to be considering offering standalone HBO Go. No cable subscription required.
Can we get that fully on record that we are getting HBO Go for sure?
Sure, that's how people are interpreting it.
That is how people are interpreting it.
But no, what happened is someone was talking to Jeff Bukes. He announced the company was... They say that he announced the company was finally considering offering streaming. What it was is somebody asked him about it. He didn't say, oh, and by the way, someone asked for the millionth time, hey, you guys going to HBO Go? And rather than him saying, no, of course not. We're owned by Time Warner. What's wrong with you? He said, well, it's a really good question, and many of you have asked it, and we ask it all the time, and we're always looking into it. And then there's a sort of... a bunch of other stuff, and there's a quote just taken out of context that says, seriously considering the best way to handle it. And I'm like, this was a way to get you to shut the hell up. It was not an answer. So
you think?
I do. I think they're looking into it. I think it's being talked about.
I think maybe there could be a tie-in with Amazon Prime, because there is an awful lot of HBO on Amazon Prime.
Don't you think Amazon's paying for that?
Well, yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
Well, no, we're paying
Amazon Prime,
because it's $99 a month now.
Yeah,
$99
a month. I mean, $99 a year, pardon me.
Yeah, that's nothing.
That's Amazon Prime rib.
He closes by saying, I don't have anything to announce about it today. Which, again, that's code for shut up and stop asking me this.
Well, I think more and more we've seen HBO. I mean, they first dipped their toes with HBO Go, and they saw such a positive response to it.
Yeah.
That they are actually realizing, hey, the whole market is going in this direction of on-demand programming, and people don't... I mean, it's such an outdated model looking at TV in this just on a cable box, I think.
I still don't agree with it 100%, because the older you get as a person and you have less and less time, like whether you have kids, whether you're deeper in your career or whatever... If you get a big ass television that doesn't have, I mean, either you have to get like an Apple box or get a TV, which these TVs for a lot of people still are super expensive, that does the Wi-Fi to be able to pick that up,
get Chromecast for $35.
Then you're not even including net neutrality and all that crap going on, because again, like Randy pointed out, they're owned by Time Warner, which
last that I heard, had a big cable thing.
But HBO was saying, right, like, before, that they also look at the Netflix model, and they're like, man, we kind of want to be like that.
Well, yes.
Which makes me think that they have a lot of sway.
Well,
people are desperate, and maybe it's a ploy just to get more money out of the cable company.
I think it's that part of it. I think they can try to. I think they'll try to do something of it. But let's look at it. But nobody really knows how much money Netflix makes. That's another problem.
Netflix does, and they're having a good time with their whatever.
Yeah, they're doing fine. But at the same time, they're not as historically as big, because HBO's been around 30 years. They started like the late 70s.
Yeah, but they're still working on the same business model that they did in the late 70s. And people today, less and less people even own televisions, because everything is on the computer. I have a 28-year-old, a 16-year-old, and a 14-year-old, and all of them watch everything on their computers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. My daughter doesn't watch anything. My 11-year-old, she doesn't watch anything on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Everything she watches is on Netflix and YouTube. If she had a connection, if she had a YouTube and a TV, that's all she needs. So here's the other thing. I've always agreed with you on this, Greg, but I'm starting to think, I've started to look at like cutting the cord and that kind of thing, and the thing is, you and I are used to a certain notion of, oh, you turn on a cable and it's there. But the internet is rapidly getting to a point where it's going to be the same thing. It doesn't really matter what the back end is, as long as the interface is clean. And I think that's the notion that we're seeing, is we're seeing more people move toward an interface.
I think it's that online stuff can create some type of DVR that can capture everything that I want to watch.
That technology exists now. You're just not using it. I know people who are much more power watcher than I am, who all you got to do is set up there's a couple services you can set up. Grant knows more about this than I do, I'm sure, where you can set stuff up and it basically queues up for you.
But the notion that you should still be satisfied with where cable is right now is ridiculous.
It's still an outdated model,
and we need to upgrade right now. We need to have a one-stop shop for all these channels, and you can a la carte.
Happen because
it will happen.
It will already happen.
I'll tell you why it won't happen. Because of too many conflicting interests. And also, you got to understand, these media properties are owned by a lot of different people that have...
The same argument was made about the music industry.
And look what happened to the music industry.
iTunes happened.
Yeah.
Groove Shark.
Yeah, but you know what?
Spotify.
Well, Spotify.
All these things are one-stop shop.
You still can't
get
the Beatles on Spotify.
Sure, yeah, but you can get everything else.
There's going to be like one or two channels that are going to be in their own realm. And it's probably going to still be Netflix or Amazon Prime.
But no, I just think everybody's expecting the demise of these big cable companies is just doesn't understand the way media works.
It's not a demise.
It's a
slow transformation.
Yeah, exactly.
You're acting like they're going to blow up the Time Warner building.
No, but even...
And you're also, I dare say, you're saying... I'm old, and everybody has to think like me.
I'm not. I'm just also. I am just.
That's exactly what
you're
saying.
No, I'm not saying that.
I come home and I'm tired, and I want to watch TV the way I've always done.
What I am saying is that from an economic point of view, you are dealing with companies that have been around for 50, 100 years. That's why
you're also dealing with companies that know how to either innovate or die,
or they will still own.
And they're going to innovate,
but you're still going to pay the same people.
We don't care where the money's going or who's getting the money. It's going to be the same people. That's not the problem.
We just want the product.
Well, they want the product. We want to see the interface change,
but,
and that's what I think you're not seeing.
I know. I do see it, but the interface might change. But I just think the same. Is it going to be the same problem?
All right. Next story we've got is Michael Che, who is on The Daily Show right now, has been announced.
Is he the black guy?
Well, it says here in the story, Che, who is black.
Very straightforward.
But this is a story about diversity, so that's why they're doing that. They're talking about diversity on TV, and this, you know, we talked about the Saturday Night Live diversity before, that was a big issue that came up. Well, they've answered sort of the diversity thing. They're bringing in Michael Che to join Colin Jost. Is that correct?
I guess Michael Che's been, he's been a writer for them for a few years, and he's also working with The Daily Show.
Yeah, he's going to be the co-lead for the first time in a long time, if not ever. It's two leads on Weekend Update that are guys.
Two guys, yeah.
I am sad about this because I thought Michael Che was a great addition to The Daily Show, and I assume, although nobody's come out and said it,
That he's leaving one for the other?
To go to Saturday Night Live. And I don't give a shit what happens on Saturday Night Live.
It's a bigger break for him, honestly.
I love Saturday Night Live. But I don't care about Michael Che either. I care about Randy's pleasure of watching late night TV.
Although...
Wow, who's like an old man there?
I'm sorry. It's true. Well,
maybe you can watch your old DVR recordings of it.
If you look at the track record between The Daily Show and Saturday Night Live, The Daily Show might actually have a better track record for turning people into big stars. Their correspondents.
Well, I don't know about that.
That's
kind of a
sliding scale, though.
Amy Poehler.
And this still goes back to like the old media.
Percentage-wise.
But this is funny. This still goes back to kind of old media. All the cable, all this stuff. Everybody still wants network money. He's probably going to make a shitload of money going to Saturday Night Live. Even for a lesser product, but he'll make more money.
Well, it's a bigger spotlight.
Yeah, bigger audience.
It's definitely, I mean, it's the right career move for him. It makes perfect sense. But I've also seen people saying that this has actually moved backwards for diversity because now all of a sudden SNL's female quotient, which has also never been super great, has now decreased. Like, there's not a big spot for a woman on the Saturday Night Live. Cecily Strong, who I don't know, I wouldn't recognize
her. She's great.
But
she's really great.
They're saying that this will allow her to do more writing and more of her own stuff. And that feels like kind of a dodge. I'm like, okay, sure, but she could already do her own stuff and be the weekend anchor, and you've sort of demoted her in the name of diversity and not diversified at all.
All right, well, let's move on to the next story.
So the next story, this is going to be fairly controversial, I think. Uh-oh. There's a spinoff of Married with Children in the works.
Oh, cool.
So there's that.
Is it?
Yes. No,
is there any more substance to this?
I'm just curious. Who watched Married with Children?
I love that show.
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
I've
never seen an episode.
Wait, Randy, is that because Katie Sagal just got her start in Hollywood, and they were all there?
They were all there.
Yeah.
It was actually kind of cool to see them all.
Well,
is that coming from that, or
the spinoff will center around awkward son Bud Bundy
because he's the only one who needs to work.
Yes,
that's pretty. That's pretty true.
And that is all they've said, I think.
Maybe it's his people putting that out.
I think it would just be an update to the formula. It would follow him. It wouldn't probably have any of the other family in there unless they do guest spots.
Because they're busy working?
Kind of like how he did a little guest spot on Modern Family.
David Faustino actually is doing the voice for one of the major characters on Legend of Korra.
Mako. Yeah,
so he's working. He's just not...
I mean, he does little things like that. His career is obviously taking a little bit of a different path, and he doesn't have the beauty or star power that the other ones had.
This is another one of those stories, though. I think Greg's right. Somebody came up to the Hollywood Star and like, hey, what's everybody working on? And Faustina was like, I got a Married with Children spinoff I'm working on, and that's as far as that's gone.
Yeah, probably.
It may have been something he invented in his own head. But this is my favorite part of the article that we're looking at.
Yeah.
Faustino has been somewhat less visible than his former co-stars.
See, that's
somewhat less visible.
That's a polite way to put it.
Yes. Maybe he intended
rather than us going, where the fuck is he back?
Yeah.
Faustino.
He was funny. I actually liked him. I actually wanted him to have more because actually the one I didn't think was going to do anything was Christina Applegate.
Yep.
Yeah.
But she's funny. She's a great
actress.
Turned
out she had been acting in
that
part.
She was acting.
She wasn't just a bimbo.
No, and I think maybe David wasn't acting. So maybe that might have been the problem.
That may be the issue.
That might have been the problem.
Finally, we have a big story about American Horror Story, which you may know changes every time. They are bringing back a character for the first time.
Yes.
The character is known as Pepper?
Pepper the Pinhead.
Pepper the Pinhead.
Yay!
Yep. Ryan Murphy said that the season, which takes place 12 years before Asylum, is sort of like what happened to Pepper before she went to the Asylum.
Oh,
so
cool.
This is her. This is Freak Show. So
yeah.
So it's just like,
she's
what
part of the circus.
She's been going around to hospitals and jails and rescuing freak circus performers who are going to be shipped away to asylums, signs the waivers, and becomes their guardians.
That oh wow! It just kind of like tells
Pinhead
her.
Does, or
that's what Pinhead does. Yes,
really.
Or
that can't be our part.
That's what they say.
She's a rescue.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, I like your Pinhead,
but so
she's
if you're
a rescue,
if you're a big fan of Pepper Pinhead, there you go.
So I guess that's just gonna link the worlds there.
Yep.
Well, who is she? Who is she?
So
played?
It is all in the same world.
Who is she played by? I don't know.
British chick who isn't really a Pinhead.
Oh.
Yeah, she does a lot of makeup.
a lot.
I was just wondering.
Actually,
just,
not as much as you would think.
Not as much. Ooh. I saw some pictures. I was like, okay.
I was wondering because, I mean, I've been seeing those ads for the new season, and they're pretty creepy.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited to see Michael Chiklis in it.
As the strong man.
As the strong man.
Sarah Paulson with two heads.
Yeah.
That was creepy. That was creepy.
Well, I have a fetish I didn't know I had.
All right, guys. Let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back in a bit. Sons of Anarchy show, guys. I can't get away from this. And it's frustrating.
Is it when you keep pulling out and they keep pulling you back in?
It is.
Do you sit on your motorcycle in the living room when you're watching Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah, I need to. To feel like a man.
I think Sons of Anarchy
is... feel like a man again, Johnny.
Sons of Anarchy is to you what True Blood was to Greg.
It's got to be. It's such a love-hate relationship. And it's back for its final season, season 7. The most recent episode is called The Black Widow. Widower. All right. This is going to go into a little bit of spoilers, and I'm the only one in the room that's actually been keeping up with this show. Very much a love-hate relationship. And here's what I'll say. I was very, very excited for this season.
Mm-hmm.
Because last season ends in a big dramatic fashion. Last season, they finally did what they needed to do between the big face-off between Charlie Hunnam, his character Jax, and Ron Perlman's character Clay Morrow. They started off in the beginning with this Hamlet-type story. It's supposed to be Hamlet, but it's with bikers.
Right.
And it's this ultimate showdown. This guy killed his father. He's going to get his revenge on him. And it took 6 seasons for them to do that when they should have pulled the trigger on that at least by season 4. So they really strung it along because Ron Perlman, you know, they didn't want to get rid of him. They finally got rid of him. Awesome. And then on top of that, they upped the ante because Jax lost his girlfriend or his wife, Tara, because Katie Seagal, his mom, killed her. So it's all just so like Shakespearean dramatic.
Ron Perlman's character wasn't his father?
No, it's his stepfather.
The guy, okay, but he killed his father.
Yeah.
So he was
he and the mother killed the father.
Oh, so yeah, he was married to
Katie Seagal. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it ends with him losing his wife. He lost his surrogate father. He's lost his actual father. He's lost his best friend. He's lost everything because he's trying to hold on to this club. And here I am thinking, oh, good. Is this finally where we get a little sense of redemption from him? Are we going to see that in this final season? Because it's the final stretch. And at this point, we're kind of watching a villain in Jax Teller. He's crossed the line. He's tortured and killed decent people. He's not a good guy anymore. Like, why are we kind of rooting for him? And I still kind of hold out hope, like, oh, can he kind of redeem himself? Especially in the wake of watching with, like, Breaking Bad, that you see Walter White go to a point where there's no return and he tries to make some last-ditch effort at redemption. And I was hoping for something like that with Charlie Hunnam. Instead, what we get at the beginning of the season is that he comes right back and doubles down with his club, basically. He's like, I lost everyone else, so I'm just really going to stick with you guys. Like, the one thing that has fucked over everything else in his life that was good. And then it just kind of, the show falls into a lot of its same tropes. It's got the mom misleading. She lies to them, and that makes them go on this terrible path of targeting the Chinese gang, and they're kidnapping and torturing and killing some of those people because he believes they killed Tara. That's stupid. It's stupid because this show does it over and over and over again. It's just tiresome. It's not so stupid, I guess, because I guess there's still the drama, but I'm just kind of tired of seeing it.
Do they do
I
it want in a something really, different? Do they do it in a really interesting way?
No. Well, she just lies, and then they go, okay, Mom, you've betrayed me so many other times, but I'm going to believe you this time.
Does he suspect that she had something to do with killing his father?
Yeah, I think he knew, but, you know, it's his mom, and she kind of explained, hey, I didn't know it was going to go that way or whatever.
Hey, what was he, Fonzie?
Hey!
So,
your father was Fonzie, son, and I had to kill him. Hey!
I've never watched an episode of Sons of Anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
It's been on my One of These Days list, but why do you keep watching?
Here's the thing about this show, and we've kind of touched on this happening with some other shows. Boardwalk Empire comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
They start off kind of rough, and then they know how to close a season.
Right.
And Kurt Sutter meanders and does a lot of stupid, immature bullshit along the way. But he can punch up drama near the end of a season like nobody's business. And you could see, I mean, it's the same guy that came from working on The Shield.
Yep.
He does some amazing, intense stuff. And makes you care about some of the characters that are sleazy. But still,
so are you still at all invested in any of the characters at this point? Do you have some investment in Katie Sedol's character?
See, I'm trying to think. I look at all these people. I'm like, I think that Tara, his wife who died in last season, was like the last holdout, like good person, except for, you know, maybe Dayton Callie's character, the Chief Wayne Unser.
Do you have to have characters you like to enjoy this? I mean, this is a show about a motorcycle gang. They're not going to be that likable.
No,
Walter
I know.
Walter White is not super likable for a lot of somebody who's always interesting.
No, I don't have to. I don't know what it is. I'm frustrated. I'm
going
to go into that voice, Johnny, my Jeff Garland. I don't know why. I'm just, man, this show, it makes me hold on to hope that they're going to do good storytelling, and then they just kind of bullshit their way through another plot. They have their silly little hijinks, like the stakes weren't upped in the last one. Mm-hmm. It's like they kind of forget. They lose sight of their direction they're going, or they're just like killing time. They're spinning their wheels.
And you're not hate-watching it, though, are you?
I wasn't when I started this episode. By the end of it, I'm like...
Not well, hate yourself watching. Just hate... I mean, like...
I was excited for it, and then I'm back in the hate watching it gets back to being exciting again.
But it is such a roller coaster of a show. I mean, do you go, yeah, bikers, I want to be a biker.
No. Actually, no. I don't like their culture. I kind of find it disgusting and deplorable and cartoonish from what actual bike culture is.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a parody to make them look... like just terrible Billy badasses. But
is it, so you said it's kind of Shakespearean. Is it also kind of like a Western? I mean, are they like a bunch of outlaw cowboys or is there anything to that?
Yeah, they are. And you kind of root for them to get away with their shenanigans and they go and kill someone and get over their head. And is it a lot of, like I said, a lot of The Shield kind of plays into it. My one other gripe with this show is Kurt Sutter has a big boner for doing montage sequences set to a cover song of some pop song. Like I said on Facebook, it's like Sons of Anarchy is Glee for bikers. Because he, in the end of this episode, he does...
I thought Glee was Glee for bikers.
That's cyclist bikers. Oh. That's another kind of bikers. But he does a rendition of Bohemian Rhapsody that kind of carries through this last torture sequence, killing of this other guy.
They ripped off Wayne's World? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they did.
So the two guys in the Pinto,
it's just
driving around.
I'm getting tired of seeing it. Yeah, Lost did this a lot, too. They would like play a song to like, and a lot of shows do this.
Sure.
They'll cover a bunch of sequences with a song.
Carry on, my wayward son.
But I don't like it anymore when the Sons of Anarchy does it. And it feels like it's corny and it feels like a cheat for them to just kind of push a bunch of crap. It's formulaic.
Now, part of it is because of the songs they pick or the style of the covers? Or
yeah, it's just a cluster of things, I guess, that are all kind of gotten me down on this.
Well, how is he acting? I mean, I know, didn't Katie Sagal win an Emmy? I know it doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying it's like, as far as like, because it seems to be one of those shows
They ham it up.
No, it just seems one of those shows that doesn't get... Because the funny thing is that Kurt Sutter always complains about this shit because even though he hates it, he still wants it. It's so that's the one thing I like about him, that when he tweets and you read his blog, it's like he wants the acclaim, but he hates having to beg for the acclaim. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, it's not deserving of any acclaim in the acting category. It's a bunch of raised eyebrows and hot-headedness.
Okay.
And there's very little subtlety to any of the acting. Mm-hmm. I think that Charlie Hunnam actually does a pretty good job here and there mm-hmm. with some scenes, but other times he's cartoonish like the rest of them.
Well, he looks like a grade B, like, which is the one who plays Thor?
Oh, yeah. Chris Hemsworth. Chris Hemsworth.
He looks like Heath Ledger.
Well, he's not even Hemsworth's brother. So he's like a cousin.
Liam Hemsworth is Chris Hemsworth's brother.
I know, but I mean, he's not even that. He's like the fourth Baldwin brother.
Well, anyway, these are my thoughts on the show. I know that most people are rabid fans if they're fans of the show at all. So I'm sorry. Let me know what you guys think. I will gladly discuss with you guys in the comments about this show. But we should move on to the next show, which, Greg, I believe you're going to cover The Nick.
The Nick. The old Nick in the village, in what is Greenwich Village 1900.
Is it Greenwich?
Yeah, it's Greenwich Village.
It's funny, they're like, all the poor people are here. We're left with the poor people.
Well, that's...
It's like, it'll get rich again.
It's just... all you gotta do is just go Google the history of New York and the way the migration uptown and stuff. But yeah, because all the immigrants came through Ellis Island, which is close to the village and close to Lower East Side, so that's where they all were at the time.
Yeah.
All the rich people, the Vanderbilts and everything, moved up to the Upper West Side and all that. So the Nick is just about... hospital doing new techniques in 1900 in New York City. It's got Clive Owen. Sorry.
Clive Davis.
That'd be an interesting show. Clive Davis was still alive in 1900, I think. But Clive Owen, who there's certain actors I just have a thing for. I don't know why.
He's got such gravitas.
But
Clive Owen.
He never looks like he's working hard. He never looks like he's acting hard. He's always hardly working. Yeah, he
always acts like he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah,
I like the idea of my doctor not looking like he's working.
Oh no, he's working. And in this last episode, the new technology of X-ray machines are there, and he's like all excited about it. He's talking about like the X-ray of a hand or something. But just the idea of progress being made, and basically how all the characters have to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. They're trying. You have a rich family benefactor. They are trying to integrate the hospital. They're trying to do things because they do feel like this weird, not weird, but like you get like the rich people back then. Some of them just really felt like it was their duty because they were rich that they actually had to take care of the poor.
Yeah.
What?
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? I know nowadays people don't think that way, but back then some people actually did. But then you also have some other rich people who didn't give a shit. Like it's their fault. Like, Grant, you saw that scene where they're debating about the cost of the Nick. And you have like the
just father. Come up north. Screw these
people. But the religious guy. I don't know. Was
the father.
And he's oh, well, if we just take care of them, then we're spoiling them. It's because it's their own fault they're like this. I was like, man.
They're filthy. Look at their shoes. Yeah, or that guy's like, that's how we shun you.
Yeah, it's like, it's just really funny. It's like, man, these people were fucked up back then.
Yeah.
But I find the whole show fascinating. I love Clive Owen. And basically his, I wouldn't say his nemesis, but his...
foil.
His foil is Algernon Edwards, who's played by Andre Holland. He's the black doctor who knows certain techniques, but still Owen's character, John Thackeray, which I love that name.
Thackeray. It's great. It's a great name.
That is a great name. He still has a couple things up on him. So it's not like a trope where, okay, we bring the black doctor who knows everything and then he needs a shot. He does need a shot, but he still respects Thackeray because Thackeray does know more shit. Like,
yeah, he respects that there's something to be gained in his education, but I still love the fact that this show, I mean, we've seen these tropes so often, like the black guy comes in or the down on their luck or the underdog in some situation comes in and they show that they have the skill and they earn the respect of their superior and suddenly they're in tight. And instead, it's like this guy comes in and Thackeray's like, fuck off, get out of here. Yeah. And then like Thackeray shows that he's awesome. Yeah. And this guy still hasn't been able to try and prove himself. Right. They're still just constantly racist to him. And he's the one still wanting to be around them just to get the experience.
Well, they had a scene where...
I mean, it's not following a lot of what we're familiar with.
It's more real life. Like,
yeah.
Like the family, the rich family that...
And you can see the path of him weaseling his... I shouldn't say weaseling.
He's winding his way through that.
He's making his mark, I guess, finally.
Well, it's also... He's like in both worlds. He's got to live in this... renter's house. We've got poor black people that want to challenge him because he's too uppity, and he ends up kicking one guy's ass because he's a boxer. And yet his mother is a maid for the benefactors of the hospital.
Which was a nice way to kind of explain his background,
right? And the thing is, too, is like, so his mother gets sick, so the daughter is Robertson.
So he's in further debt to Thackeray.
Right. Well, that's a great thing.
Saves his ass and saves his mom.
He's thinking, I got to take my mother to the hospital. And Thackeray is, nah. All I got to do is squeeze this thing; he'll be fine. She'll be fine.
Just pop the cyst in her back. Yeah. Problem solved. It was like,
Can I say I just finally started watching this.
Uh huh.
And I come at it from, I think, a different point of view because I had zero interest in the setting.
The 1900 hospital show,
this sounded not at all like what I wanted to watch.
It's more like a real life American Horror Story.
Clive Owen, I really like, and Steven Soderbergh, I love. And so I'm like, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I've only seen the one episode so far, but it is so beautifully shot. And the characters are so interesting.
But it's also so visceral.
That I fell right into it. And the visceral stuff actually puts me off.
Yeah.
Like I say, I've done my time in hospitals.
You know a little bit more about hospitals than the rest of us. A little, you know.
And I don't need those flashbacks. Yes. All it does is remind me of unpleasant things.
Aren't you glad that you don't live in 1900?
Yes, I am. I would not have lived in 1900, okay? That would not have happened. But I find it just really, really interesting because it's not just about sort of the technology and how weird it was to be. That's almost just the backdrop. It's about the character stories and that kind of thing. And I think that's what makes it
work. You know what's awesome about this show? This is Soderbergh. Like, so for it, there's this one scene where they bring prostitutes to the guy, the cop brings prostitutes to the guy and tries to get it. And they try to one of these
pimp mob bosses,
and they try to get a new business deal going. And so the guy does the obligatory, okay, well, girls, let me see what you got. And a great thing that I loved about it is they didn't show anything. They showed it from the mob point of view, his viewpoint, and you only see the girl's back. Mm-hmm. So it was so cool.
It was tastefully done.
But you knew exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, remember we'd always talk about, like, you have all of these dark
Game of
shows.
Thrones or whatever, they have to show the boobs.
Well, it was ironic enough is that, like, I saw in Boardwalk Empire, they had a kind of gratuitous, just naked lady shot. That was this crazy in the last episode. I'm not, you know, it was this weird. It was like, man, okay, I get it. But do we have to do that way? But then I thought about what Soderbergh did. It was like, no, you can still get the same visceral feeling and you can still see how he degrades these girls without really degrading
the actresses.
And in fact,
I mean, given the fact that it's on an adult show, it's kind of pulling a move that you'd see on network TV.
Yeah.
But it had such, like, more weight and impact to that shot. Because you know how gritty everything else is. It just kind of felt like a more mature approach to it rather than like dodging censors kind of thing.
Well, for the record, I'm pro boob. I'm pro seeing the boobs.
Well, I mean, it just was interesting.
There's an internet I have to show you.
Yeah, it just was interesting because the whole show for me is like that. It's like, it's not just Thackeray is a thug and the black, like you were saying, that the black guy's got to show him the light. And even like the thug guy who was Chris Sullivan, who plays Tom Cleary.
I love that character, by the way. Quick side note,
we have to do the show of like partners that we want to see do their own show. Like Cleary and then Sister Harriet, who's played by Kara Seymour.
Oh, that's
I want
great.
To see them in a show. Kind of like I want to see The Bridge, you know, the drug dealer and his little partner running all the time. I could just watch that all the time.
See, the ambulance thing was fascinating to me because they've got the first episode has a scene where the guys go and they grab a patient from some other ambulance team and they're like, the guy puts his dukes up and he's ready to fight him.
They
pull out bats and they're like, no, we're taking him. I'm like, that is an ambulance show I'd watch.
Yeah. Well, it gets deeper because. Okay, so Sister Harriet works at the NIC.
They're doing a mobile abortion.
Well, they're doing a mobile abortion thing.
That's a show I'd watch.
Yeah,
mobile abortion unit. But now on HGTV.
But it just gets to this thing where this partnership where they're doing these this crazy life, but they're so funny together. And at first you think they hate each other, but then now they're in this weird business and they actually really like that scene at the bar where they're just talking about, we should move uptown, and they're like kind of making fun of each other's.
Yeah.
The show is beautifully shot. The music, Cliff Martinez is he does the soundtrack.
It's a very modern music for a 1900 setting.
But it's so...
It's electric. It's like energizing for it.
It's like because Thackeray is constantly doing coke and opiates to go up and bring him down. So it kind of just has that feeling. There's certain music or certain songs that just, if you've dabbled in substances, that just give you that weird feeling that like this, it's like what like the blood in your head sounds like when you're going up and down.
Now
all
I have
the time
to go dabble in substances so I can have a deeper understanding.
Yeah, I'm not going to confirm or deny I've dabbled in some of those substances, but it
confirmed.
The music is perfect, and like there's a beautiful scene. Like Grant and I were just talking about this. It's like this is the show that's on air now that just cuts off like in like the perfect spot, but you're like, oh, that's it. Like there's a scene where Thackeray is got the eye of the one nurse, Lucy Elkins, who's played by the cute Eve Hewson. I think that's how you pronounce her name. She's cute.
Yeah.
And she rides her bike. She's like the earliest hipster. She rides her bike to work.
She's totally putting on a Jodie Foster from Silence of the Lambs accent, by the way.
Yes, I know.
She's got that kind of hillbilly accent.
Well, yeah, she's from South Carolina. First thing she came
sounds like Larry the Cable Guy.
Well, the first time she came to city, she bought one of them bicycles, or I can't remember what they called it, but then Thackeray did not know how to ride it.
Yeah.
And so she's teaching him how to ride
it. It was a beautiful scene.
It was just beautiful, and then the joy on Clive Owen's face and just... How
well,
cute
and
it was.
Like you said, with the musical cues, all of it.
Well, it was probably high, is the joy.
Yeah. Well,
that's what it is.
No, it was before. Actually, she followed him to one of his heroin dens, and so she's interested in him, too. This show is just, it's got a lot of rich characters. There's also some crazy stuff with, like, the baby that got the meningitis and stuff.
How many episodes are in the run?
We are in
it's gonna be
10.
Oh,
there's 10.
Are five right now.
Yes, that was five, but there are 10.
And it's got renewed for a second season.
Which I'm so happy it did.
Do we think Soderbergh's going to come back for a second season?
Yes.
Is that confirmed?
I hope so.
In some capacity. I don't know if he'll be directing. It might be where he kind of starts sharing it they have to do with True Detective.
I guess he has moved on from movies, so I guess there's no reason he couldn't.
They shot this in... like 2 months or something.
Yeah,
like
it was
some
sort of
crazy schedule. It was basically
by movie standards, really fast.
Yeah, it was basically like a set, like a 10 hour movie shoot. And one of the things I do like is like right afterwards they have like the breakdown of the episode you just saw with different characters in it. I love watching this.
I haven't seen any of those.
It's like 2 minutes.
Oh,
like,
man.
Just like breaking down the Knicks. It's got Clive Owen. It's got Andre Holland.
To see that.
Chris Sullivan just talking about those scenes and just. It's really well done.
This is definitely my must watch show on TV right now.
Yeah.
If I had to pick something, you guys all need to watch this. It's definitely great.
This is the only show I watch live.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I did not. I mean, I liked it, but I didn't plug into it on that level.
Oh, well.
It gets better, man.
Yeah, just keep watching because I was already kind of hooked on the first episode, but I just think it intensifies.
Huh.
All right. Well, let's move on to.
Show very similar to the Nick in many ways.
It's a medical
about doctors.
Show.
It's about a doctor.
Of doctors. Only one doctor.
One doctor. And it's like the Nick. It's a period piece. So the period is all time and space.
It's more of an elliptical piece.
Yeah,
it's a flat circle.
And
ellipsis piece.
Yes,
elliptical. Ellipsis.
So Doctor Who is back for what they call series 8. Which is inaccurate because it's been running forever, but Series 8 since it was rebooted in 2006. And it is another new Doctor, the 12th Doctor, Peter Capaldi. And it is
he's an old man. He's the first old man Doctor of the new crowd.
Is but this the last Doctor?
All the previous... No, they did a workaround thing. There's going to be like 13 more Doctors.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. They were never going to let that go. Come on. They're 4 episodes in to the new season.
Right.
Now, the old Doctor, they used to all be old Doctors.
Yeah. Like, did they?
Weren't they? I mean, with exception...
I never watched the old show. Every time I tried to watch the old-timey ones, they were so Sid and Marty Croft. Yeah. English Sid and Marty Croft.
Yeah.
Looking at the pictures, though, they were a bunch of older-looking dudes that were
older
to play the Doctor.
They were definitely not Matt Smith and David Tennant.
Not Dreamboats.
Like, well, that's why there were no women watching it until they did the reboot.
They brought in Christopher Eccleston, a man's man.
That's right. And a religious man
and a religious,
in The Leftovers.
Then he became The Leftovers man.
So Peter Capaldi coming back in. I've seen some interesting reactions to this. I've seen, it seems like a lot of people, and I would count myself amongst this camp, are not so sold on Capaldi yet.
My problem isn't about Capaldi. Mm-hmm. It has been that in the last few years, they've kind of forgotten that the Doctor is a part of the show, and they've just built up all these companions.
You're not wrong.
Doing so much stuff that the Doctor is the least least interesting part. They finally, with this fourth episode, made a Doctor Who episode.
That's good. I mean,
really, even though Claire's in it and they're getting into some stuff, they finally made it center on him and his mind and the way he thinks of things.
Here's my question, though. I almost feel like the show was launched as a companion show. Like, Rose was really important. And then I feel like the show worked because I've never been that big into the Doctor, but I liked Amy Pond and Rory, and I like Clara, even though I don't like what they've done with her. We talked about before the show, someone explained the Impossible Girl thing without doing a thesis-level writing, and I can't do it. I don't know
I don't get
what
it.
That means. But I like the actresses they're picking. I like the idea of it being sort of someone else's viewpoint of the Doctor. It's not...
Sure. The companions are the surrogate for the audience.
Yeah.
And that was the thing about Amy and Rory was, after a while, their adventures were more outrageous than the Doctor's. Yeah. Rory was a robot that had the brain of Rory. I mean, it was like, I don't understand this anymore. It's messy and I'm tired of it.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, we get into Orphan Black territory where you're like, oh, I like the people, but the stories don't make any sense anymore.
Yeah, and it just, the longer it went on, the more the story with Matt Smith, the more it was like they would say, okay, this would make a really cool ending.
Yeah.
Let's backwards engineer a story out of this big ending.
Yeah.
Like the android that he was shrunken in and was driving a Matt Smith android.
I actually liked almost that entire season. I was pretty happy with that.
But I was just like, would you just get on? Anyway, so Peter Capaldi.
Do you feel like the Capaldi stuff has righted the ship at all? I mean, it feels the same to me. I don't feel like it changed that much.
Especially when the way it started, because it started with Drax and the lizard lady and her little
Love those characters.
I do too, but there was no reason to start with them because fill up a room.
There absolutely was, because they wanted to ease people into the notion of this old Doctor. So they wanted to give all the people who'd been watching the show for a long time and had never seen an old Doctor the, hey, look, it's still the same show. All these characters you love, they're still here. And here's this old guy who you're going to have to get used to.
I could have dealt with just jumping into a story with
but
him.
I don't know that my daughter, who's the biggest Doctor Who fan I know, that's not true, the biggest Doctor Who fan in the house. I work at a comic store. I know
how many tattoos does she have?
Yeah, exactly. I can't say biggest, but a big Doctor Who. I don't know that she would have gone along with it without having the characters that she knew to ease her in. You know?
I could see that, and I like those characters. I just didn't need them to be in the first episode.
I was glad they were.
They really fill up a room.
Yeah, they do.
I mean,
they
was kind of like he was an afterthought in that episode.
Yeah.
And the same for the second and even the third episode.
They're easing viewers in. You feel like that might not have been the way to go?
I didn't care for the Robin Hood.
I loved the Robin Hood episode. Yes.
See,
I did.
A little squirrelier than me.
Everybody's got different takes on Doctor Who. Like, everyone will have a favorite episode that everybody else hates and vice versa.
Yeah.
The reaction I've seen from a lot of friends, they hated the Robin Hood episode.
I didn't hate it. Yeah. I just felt like I'd seen it before.
Yeah. I really liked their take on it. I liked Clara having a crush on him.
Yeah, I liked that.
I liked the sort of proto Cary Elwes guy they found to play Robin Hood. I thought they was good.
And I liked the fact that she's like, I want to go somewhere I want to go, you know? And it was like, and then he's going, hey, this isn't real, you know?
I liked the Doctor's rivalry with Robin Hood. I thought that was a fun bit.
And I liked their denouement towards the end.
Yeah, the summation at the end was really strong.
Good. That was good.
And it was just fun.
So dorky. Leading up to that end, it was just I don't know. It was just dorky to me. Is it
time to rest the Daleks?
Oh, yeah.
Because I like the Daleks, but I feel like we haven't gotten a great Dalek episode in a while.
Well, we didn't need another Dalek.
We didn't need
right
another
off
one.
The bat.
So,
yeah.
But then the fourth one, which I have not seen yet, you say they bring in the silence.
Well, I wouldn't say that. It's they say the silence at the end of the universe.
Oh, okay.
So they don't bring in those big Men in Black silence guys,
right.
but it's very cerebral compared to the others. And again, that's a sliding scale of cerebralness.
Doctor Who cerebral.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think Doctor Who is still a kid's show?
I thought so after the Robin Hood episode.
Okay.
especially the three. That was the thing. Three in a row of feeling like, okay, is this a kid show or not? I can't tell anymore.
I mean, do you feel like it hasn't been for a long time?
I feel like it has been a kid show for a while.
Okay.
And I don't feel like the David Tennant episodes were kid shows. Maybe some of them.
Okay.
But there was some dark stuff on there. And there was a lot of Dark Night of the Soul stuff in David Tennant.
I guess I like that as more of a kid show. I like it being a little lighter. So I don't know. Anyway, the other question I want to ask before we move on, what do you think of the overarching villain they're building up, this whoever this woman is who's talking about heaven and keeps recruiting all his bad guys to do to the Justice League
Missy?
Of Evil? Missy, yes.
Yeah, that was that was another one. Is that the clockwork guy that fell through and ended up in heaven?
Yeah.
They just kind of blew off that David Tennant episode of The Girl in the Fireplace.
Yeah.
Because he was in love with her. Yeah. He was willing to drop being this gallivanting doctor and be with her.
Yeah.
It was Sophia Miles in that episode. And that was really a powerful episode.
Yeah.
And that he was heartbroken that he couldn't be with her, that it didn't work out.
Right.
And he wasn't going to, you know, rip the galaxies apart to make it work. And that was, they just kind of made light of it in that episode.
Yeah.
And that to me was like, oh, is that where we are now? He never really had feelings. He's, you know, I don't like that. That's what I liked about Christopher Eccleston. If I don't think that I would have watched the show when they rebooted the show, if it wouldn't have had someone of Christopher Eccleston's gravitas, because
yeah, I can see that,
because he's just a big badass, you know, and I like the idea of, because to me, Doctor Who was a kind of a pansy show, you know, it was in Starlog magazine and it was on PBS in the middle of the night and it looked terrible and it was all cheesy. It was so cheesy. And, you know, I just never watched it. And I've seen a few now and they're like, okay, I can get in that. But it, nostalgic wise, but when I was a kid, it was like, what is this?
You know? Yeah. It's interesting. And I liked the Eccleston version, but the Matt Smith version is my favorite version.
Really?
Yeah. I like it as a lighter, fun show. That's kind of what I prefer out of it.
I like the idea that the doctor is like, if I get into a situation that I have to punch my way out of, I'll be able to punch my way out of it.
See, and I like the notion of him as a problem solver who doesn't do the typical action movie violent stuff.
He never had to.
Yeah.
But I liked knowing that he could. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I don't know. I like the more cerebral doctor who tries to think his way out of everything and kind of has to, because that's what his skill set is. It's a different take. I mean, it all works. I like all of it, basically. But I like some of it more than others. And Matt Smith's version was what I liked. And Capaldi, I'm not sold on yet.
I'm fine with him.
I'm not against
him. I'm not in love with him, but I'm fine with him.
Yeah.
I'm glad that they went, okay, let's have an old man.
Well, someone posted a thing that I think that was a, here's where you are. There's a doctor circle, and it's like, I hate this guy. He's the worst. The last guy was the best ever. And then slowly you soften until, this is the best doctor. I hope they never replace him. Oh, they're replacing him. This is bullshit. And it's just a cycle. And that's pretty true. I don't ever go to the hate I don't hate the new guy, but I definitely wind up in the, I don't know about this guy every time. And by the end, I've almost always gone to, oh, I kind of like this guy.
Do you guys anticipate that Capaldi will stay a while or?
Season or two.
Yeah.
Nobody stays on that long.
Who was the first one? Eccleston? He was only a year?
He was a year.
And he was just there to kick it off?
Yeah.
The buzz I heard was that he only wanted to do it for 1 year.
Yeah.
And he did it as a favor. Like he, because of his, he's a pretty well-known actor, especially in England.
Yeah.
And he had the clout that they could, if he would sign up for it, they could get the show rebooted and get it financed.
It's funny because I love that actor. I just thought it was, the show was so corny with him there, and that was what was off-putting to me. And I'm like, why does everyone love this show? I don't get it.
What, just from the first couple of episodes with the mannequin people, or did you watch
it was all the way through. I got all the way to halfway through Tenet's run, I guess, before I quit.
But, oh, wow.
Yeah, it just wasn't clicking for me.
Yeah, it really worked for me. But
I love Eccleston.
There was a lot going on in my personal life that there was something about that whole regeneration and you know, that kind of stuff really worked for me at the time.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So we'll keep watching. Curious to hear you guys' thoughts about Capaldi, the new doctor, and where you think the show's going. If you think they need to change the writing, if you think that Capaldi's going to work, who you think this big bad is going to be, all that kind of stuff. you can chime in the comments. Y'all know me, still the same OG, but I've been low key, hated on by most these niggas with no cheese, no deals and no G's, no wheels and no keys, no boats, no snowmobiles and no skis. Mad at me cause I can finally afford to provide my family with groceries. Got a crib with a studio and a saw full of tracks to add to the wall full of plaques, hanging up in the office and back of my house like trophies. Did y'all think I'ma let my dough freeze? Hold please, you better bow down on both knees. Who you think taught you to smoke trees? Who you think brought you to ODs? Eazy-E's, Ice Cubes and D.O.C's, the Snoop D.O.G's, and a group that said motherfuck the police. Gave you a tape full of dope beats to bump when you stroll through in your hood, and when your album sales wasn't doing too good, who's the doc that he told you to go see? Y'all better listen up closely, all you niggas that said that I turn pop or the firm flop, y'all are the reason that Dre ain't been getting no sleep. So fuck y'all, all of y'all, if y'all don't like me, blow me. Y'all are gonna keep fucking around with me and turn me back to the old me. Nowadays, everybody wanna talk like they got something to say, but nothing comes out when they move their lips, just a bunch of gibberish, and motherfuckers act like they forgot about Dre. Nowadays, everybody wanna talk like they got something to say, but nothing comes out when they move their lips, just a bunch of gibberish, and motherfuckers act like they forgot about Dre. So what do you
wish say? That you had some kind of a say in what shows get picked for pickup? You
like
hear
a
about
Nielsen it? Kind of thing?
Yeah, well, or even more like Hollywood fat cat who says, yeah. Yes. Yeah, you're gold, baby. You're
all
gold.
All the time.
Let me throw a bucket of money at you, and you go make us a show.
How can
I
do
love
this?
The pilot. Well, you might have a chance to pretend that you have some influence if you're a member of the exclusive Amazon Prime family.
I am.
You
me
are?
Yeah.
So am I.
Me too. We can do this.
Well, what kind of, what's the old Groucho Marx thing? Any club that would have us as members is a club that we wouldn't want to be part of?
Any club that would have us as members would charge $90 a year.
Yeah, exactly. $99.
And give us free shipping.
Yeah. Oh.
But, okay, so we're all familiar with the Amazon Prime model and mm-hmm. their Amazon Prime television delivery system.
They haven't fully taken off as, like, they're not in the same realm as Netflix yet, it doesn't seem.
But you know what? They have a lot of HBO.
They do.
HBO series.
But all their original programming...
Their original programming is still
a little
in
lacking.
The works.
Yeah.
Yeah, and their free movies are pretty much Netflix level. There's not a whole lot of, new releases or anything. Which is strange because on the menu board, the big marquee of their... What's available free on Amazon Prime? It's like, oh, A Walk in Italy or what?
Yeah.
No, it's thanks. Like, wow, you're advertising that? That movie bombed the first time it came out.
Yeah.
So their model that they have going on, and I honestly don't know, just not to talk bad about a club that I am such a faithful member in,
sure.
But I don't know exactly how much feedback they use. But what they're do, and they're available now on Amazon Prime, they released about 10, over the last 2 years, they released about 10 pilots. A couple of them are a full hour, but most of them are half hour, kind of sitcom-y. And so they release these pilots, and then you're supposed to grade them. And then go online separate. This is where they make it a little too complicated. You're supposed to go online to a different way instead of just doing it on your TV with your remote.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, and write to them and tell them what you think and all that. Well, a couple of now...
But maybe that throttles it so they don't have to deal with so many things.
That those decisions have already been made.
Yeah.
You know, I just can't help but think that the People's Choice Awards are the most valid recommendation for, extending contracts.
We may be cynics.
But I think we're probably right.
You know, we're not cynics. We're TV dudes. So before I go any further with what they're pitching right now, what they do have on is Alpha House, which is produced and written by Gary Trudeau, G.B. Trudeau of Doonesbury fame.
Mm-hmm.
And we've mentioned it before. Greg's a big fan.
I think it's out of the ones I've seen is probably the best one. I mean... It's the tightest. I don't know if it's just because of Gary Trudeau and acting is great in it, but it's kind of like, it's actually like between Veep and House of Cards. It's really weird.
That's a good way to put it.
Like you would I think I said this before. You have the vice president, that's Selena. You have Frank Underwood. And if you had this Congress, those senators, I want to see that crossover show.
Whereas Veep is an ensemble with a vice president and a bunch of supporting players. They're all pretty equal. John Goodman probably gets more screen time than the other ones, but they're all equal politicians.
And they also have real politicians in it.
They do have real politicians pop up and real news people, and mm-hmm. Bill Murray popped up a little bit. So, I can't recommend Alpha House highly enough. I think it's one of the best shows on TV. And it's very much like, if you like Doonesbury, the dialogue is written just like a Doonesbury strip. It's pretty brilliant. Very underplayed punchlines. On the flip side of that, we have a one-hour pilot called Hysteria, starring what I think is the most overlooked and underappreciated actress, Mina Suvari.
Sorry, I'm laughing because of the off-mic conversation that this brought up.
Randy doesn't want me to love anything beautiful, so he talks badly about Mina Suvari.
Are you serious? You love Mina Suvari?
I love Mina Suvari.
Love whatever bad actresses you want, man. I'm good with it.
Just because she's good looking doesn't mean she can act.
I think that's about 90% of it, but I just love her. I think she's great, and but she's not so good in this.
Shocker. So this is Hysteria.
So this show is called Hysteria, and it's produced and written by Sean Cassidy of Da Do Ron 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 in the 70s.
Really? Sean Cassidy?
Sean Cassidy. He's
done a bunch of TV.
He did a bunch
of TV
stuff that died on the vine real early.
Wow. But he did American Gothic way back when, which was a sort of an edgy Fox show. I mean, Cassidy's a guy who sort of made a name for himself as a TV producer.
Cassidy.
I mean, they're a showbiz family. Jack Cassidy was a big Broadway guy. Yeah. And
David?
You know, David Cassidy is
But it sounds
Keith
like
Partridge.
He's back to his old ways of making bombs?
Oh, my God. Well, this one is... one thing I'll say is that it is Austin set. It is set here, and it's actually filmed here.
Oh.
But there's one scene where all of the high school dance squad sneaks out of their house and drives to Dripping Springs to the Ferguson, the old abandoned snow globe factory, Ferguson Globes. Yeah, right? Because snow globes are a big thing.
Yeah.
Dripping Springs, industrial side of town. And they meet up with a Puerto Rican guy and a black guy who are going to teach them to break dance. And
stop. Was this made in the 90s?
This is in the 80s, the 90s, right? This
well,
is not modern.
Well, they're kind of crunky break. I call it all break dancing. The twist is
okay.
Break dancing.
It doesn't matter. They're teaching someone to dance in a warehouse.
They sneak out.
Warehouse.
The whole squad sneaks out because they're going to get the winning dance moves from these two really bad guys.
Oh, this isn't it. I thought this was like a horror movie.
Does that not sound like the setup for some kind of horrible?
It's either a horror movie or Glee. I don't know.
A snow globe factory, Greg.
Snow globe in a place that doesn't snow? Yeah.
Is this the initial crime and like the cold open kind of thing? Is this what's going on?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So a girl, a girl falls down and starts having a seizure when one of the guys starts putting moves on her, and she's going, I'm not like my sister. Because her sister is like putting the moves on the other guy.
Gotcha.
And they're drinking something. You can't really tell what. She falls down and starts having a seizure. They freak out. They put her in the hospital, and it gets videotaped, right? Or videotaped. They film it on a phone.
Of course.
they record it on a phone. I my nomenclature is very old. And so they load that up. It goes around the school, and pretty soon everybody in the school that's watching this video and laughing about it starts also having seizures.
The Ring. Gotcha.
Yeah,
that was the plot of The Ring.
That was?
Well, sort of. You watch it, and then 8 days later, you die kind of thing.
They say it's based on a true story.
Really?
Now, it apparently didn't happen in Austin, because I don't even think we've had a snow globe factory.
The snow globe was part of the true story?
It's a big part of it. They use snow globes for all the Segway scenes, or all the interstitial filler. And they film through snow, like the camera will come through a snow globe like it's Citizen Kane. It's the Citizen Kane of bad cable, pay cable shows.
Yeah.
Man, remember all the snow globes back in 2003 when there were those three competing snow globe factories in Austin? That was crazy.
Yeah.
Back
That's
in
bananas.
The,
we didn't know how good we had it.
It was such a boom market for
miles around.
People came from Ellis Island with their snow globe dreams.
So, if you don't mind, can I read the synopsis of this show real
quick? Please do.
So, Hysteria says, it's an investigative thriller about a haunted young doctor who is summoned back to her hometown to investigate an epidemic that may be linked to social media and her own tragic past.
I'm out.
Her own tragic past is, this is where it's a show where you go, hey, Sean Cassidy, were you walking through the produce aisle and just said, I think I'll take a little bit of Rectify.
Yeah.
Throw this in my basket. Because her tragic past is that her brother is on death row for murdering. She's a psychiatrist, neurologist. Her brother is on death row for murdering somebody. And he tells her she needs to go to Austin. He's in, I guess, Huntsville. That's where our death row is, folks.
Yep.
And, standing room only.
Right next to our snow globe factory number 4.
Yeah. The snow globe, they're prisoners who make the snow globe, right?
You can have a Huntsville snow globe.
That's why the other one's abandoned.
You shake it, and instead of snow, it's like little lightning bolts.
I was going to say it's little people with don't kill him signs floating around.
Little shanks, little shifts.
So, yeah, you could have a whole series. It could be the Franklin Mint snow globe collection of Huntsville, Texas. So he tells her that he senses, like, apparently his murder that he committed wasn't of his own doing. He was possessed by something. And he tells her that the girls in Austin are doing the same stuff that he was doing before he ended up committing this murder.
This sounds very clean and straightforward and, like, you know, not convoluted like or silly.
Like a Mr. Clean commercial.
Oh, jeez.
And, So you start with a little bit of Rectify, and then you get into a little bit of a breakdancing competition. But you do recognize the Sea Dragon, that one on 183, that strip center there with the IHOP.
And yeah.
They use that parking lot for 1 minute or two.
So this is Rectify meets Step It Up meets The Ring.
Bring it on.
It's totally
bring
Step It Up,
it's
right?
Bring it on. Step It Up.
Step It Up, whatever.
Meets The Ring.
So
exactly.
Your overall assessment is no.
Oh, my God. This is so bad. This is so bad. And it's filmed in Austin. So it's really bad if I have to say, don't bother with an Austin show.
That sounds terrible.
Sean Cassidy just did another version of the Hardy Boys.
I know,
I'd
right?
I watched that. He was great in those. I love those.
I know. I would love if they were like old-ass Hardy Boys with McLean Stevenson. And
everybody. We just lost.
Now, what was his name? It was McLean Parker.
Yeah, we just lost half the audience. They have no idea who the Hardy Boys are, who Sean Cassidy is, and his TV show from 1977 we're talking
about. Yeah, Randy
Parker
and I have
Stevenson.
No clue.
Parker Stevenson.
Yeah. That was it. Yeah, thank
Pamela
you.
Sue Martin.
Pamela Sue Martin was
Nancy Drew.
Nancy Drew. She was on every other week.
Yep.
Well, what else we got?
So the other show, and you're a fan of this guy, Greg, Jay Chandrasekhar.
Mm-hmm. Grant, you mean.
Grant.
Jay Chandrasekhar,
I mean,
from Broken Lizard.
I get you too confused.
Well, it's a G thing.
Yeah.
It's a G thing. You wouldn't understand.
Yeah, it's a G thing.
Yeah, you're both
ain't nothing
OGs.
But.
And this is the one that has Sarah Chalk, who everybody in the world loves Sarah Chalk.
Does it have a cool sassy title? What's it called?
It's called Really?
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 Oh.
And it is so bad. It is one of those shows where you go, I don't know anybody that acts like these people, except for the one husband who's a drunk. Everybody knows a guy like that.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
don't know anybody that would put up with it the way Selma Blair puts up with it.
So
it's just terrible. It's one of those shows where it's like, get ready for your birthday blowjob.
Oh,
that's
my God.
That's like legitimate. I don't want to hear Sarah Chalk say that. You know?
I do, but in a certain context.
I want it to go without saying. If I'm going to bring Sarah Chalk into it, I don't want it to be currency. That's just a waste of a great cast. And it's in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Well, looking at the synopsis again for this one, it says, a funny, honest, behind-the-curtains look at the psychological and emotional complexities of marriage and the charged dynamics of a tight-knit group of friends grasping onto what's left of their youth. This just sounds so derivative of so
happy
many
ending,
other projects.
It's a 30-minute show, and you see the husband, who, because he's an Indian in Chicago, is a surgeon. You have two scenes of him masturbating.
My Indian friend is actually a doctor, so it makes sense.
My doctor is actually...
Well, I lived in India, and a lot of them aren't doctors.
No? That's weird.
Yeah, there's... You know, when you have a billion people, the doctor to
they're civilian, all doctors? I thought they're all.
The doctors are the ones who said, I'm leaving. So
this is going into some dangerous territory.
Yes. Any show where the husband character has to masturbate twice because his wife got a phone call in the middle of sex is kind of like, and moves out to the couch to do it. Is
wait,
like,
that's
really
so,
what?
Why
this is a terrible show.
And
Adam
why
Sandler
she's
did this?
Handling answering the phone during sex. It's just,
I know, right?
No, I'm sorry. You've got a messed up marriage. Especially now, because back in the day, if it was like a house phone, it could kind of make sense. But now it's cell phones.
Well, it's his cell phone because he's a doctor. But you know what? Getting into the details of it just makes it worse.
But it's because
they're all just loser people that you don't want to spend 30 minutes with.
It sounds like a worse version of like Married, which actually has kind of realistic situations that you can get in.
That's the thing is like when you read the plot synopsis, that's kind of how I thought Married was going to be. And instead, Married turned out to be great and just gets better and better every week.
It sounds like FX kind of covered it with both Married and You're the Worst.
Exactly. Like,
they have the relationships in the city, and they have the tackling married relationships as well. And
some Hollywood...
So other shows coming in here, like,
you know,
some Hollywood
generic
executive made that call, too, not the subscribers of Amazon Prime.
Yeah. You know, can I just say, Sarah Chalk needs to fire her agent. Because she keeps getting into these really bad shows. Remember that How to Live with Your Parents for the Rest of Your Life?
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
Yeah. She keeps doing really bad shows, and she's a really good actress, and unlike Mina Suvari. That was for you, Johnny.
Was it really?
Yes, it was.
I think it was for you.
It was a little bit for me. I actually think that Sarah Chalk is a really great actress who keeps doing bad shows, and I really wish she'd fire her agent and find someone to find some better shows.
And that's Randy's thought on that. So
also fuck the Emmys.
That's the end of Really. Let me tell you,
Strike
Really
two.
Sucked. So Hysteria, that's 1 hour wasted. Really, that's 30 minutes wasted. Red Oaks, really good. Not quite there yet, but really good. I'd like to see it made into a show. This is kind of like if Caddyshack, that was, ask your parents, kids. If Caddyshack wasn't the zany screwball comedy, but was a comedy coming of age show set at a country club.
Yeah.
You very much have a Danny in there in the he's English actually. So this one, Richard Kind is the father.
I like him.
Playing basketball with his son, who is between his freshman and sophomore years of college, and his father is telling him, I want you to stop taking stupid film class electives. You know how to watch movies, you know, and you got a C in bookkeeping, in accounting. You got a C in accounting. And he says, well, a C is passing, not to a Jew.
Yeah.
A C in accounting for a Jew is an incomplete. So he's telling him to get a grip on his life in college, really buckle down to come back and work with him and his accounting firm. And then, boom, he has a heart attack on the basketball court as he's falling to the ground.
Richard Kind, yeah,
gripping his chest. And this is set in the 80s, so nobody has cell phones. I think you're going to see a lot of that.
I think you just take a Bayer, right?
Yeah.
Take a Bayer and your heart attack's gone.
Yeah, baby aspirin.
I saw the commercials.
Old people carry those in their socks.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's why you see those orange. Anyway. yeah, I think that you're going to see a lot of shows set in the 80s, not just because that's the coming of age age of a lot of the people that are producing stuff now.
But they dodge technology questions.
They dodge technology that would just tear down so much drama, you know. So he's falling down. He thinks he's going to die in the parking lot. And he says, son, don't be like me. Your mother and I have hated each other for years. I love Asians. Orientals. I love Oriental women. It's been that way since I was in Korea. Your mother, I think she's a lesbian. I don't know. But don't be like us. Live your life. And then, of course, he recovers.
Awkward.
I like that already. That's awesome.
He recovers, and in the hospital, I don't want to give away too many jokes, but the hottest Asian nurse comes in to give him a sponge bath. The mother's hitting on her, but it's all kind of underplayed. It's like the mother doesn't realize that he's into her, that they're both into her. You know,
it's
pretty funny. But the secret weapon is that we get another opportunity to find out just how great Paul Reiser is.
Oh?
Paul Reiser is the Renaissance man of 2014.
It's the Reiser-sance.
Exactly. Oh, Reiser-sance. Oh, Reiser-sance. It's kind of like Prancer-size.
How can he beat the Paul Reiser show?
Well, that was last year.
Oh, okay.
He's making up for it. He made up for it just in a pilot here.
Gotcha.
He plays the owner of the club, and he is such an asshole, and yet he's so funny. So he, I don't want to just recap the show, but this is how he is. He comes to work at the club, decides he's going to go play tennis. The young tennis pro, who is the star of the show, is going to play six rounds with him because the other guy that he was supposed to play didn't show up. He lets him win, right? He gets fired. He just fires him. So the next day, the boss tennis pro talks him into giving him a rematch. And he tells him, you don't fucking let him win. This is his club. You are insulting a man if you let him win. And, you know, Paul Reiser just totally sells that. Just, you know, don't you ever, ever let anybody win on this game. This is my tennis club. You know, this is my country club.
Gotcha.
He's just really great. He's very well cast. You know, he pulls it in a Corvette, park it in. He tells the guy Wheeler, who's the kind of the stoner guy. He tosses him the keys and he says, don't park it in the sun, but I don't want any bird shit on it.
So this sounds really promising. Because this is a period piece, it's not doing a lot of that whole like wink and nudge, like 80s reference. See that? It's not too heavy handed with that.
I think because a country club is such an exclusive place anyway, you know, it's kind of its own frozen in time.
Yeah, it's a little timeless.
I mean, there's a little bit like the girlfriend that does aerobics and the stuff that they do that's 80s doesn't feel. I mean, it's Soderbergh, right?
So yeah.
It feels authentic. So, it doesn't feel like a costume.
It's done with finesse. It's not like, 80s reference. Oh, everything is 80s.
How would Jeff Garland reference?
Oh, my God. Everything is 80s. Look at me. Watch the Goldbergs. With me. Jeff Garland.
So it would be fun.
Garland, I guess.
It would be funny in any time, set in any time.
Yeah, and it would be... appropriate, you know, the struggles and everything that the kid's going through. Struggles. I mean, he's working in a country club getting, you know, $1,000 tennis matches. And
the troubles. The time of the troubles.
The town. He works at Red Oaks Country Club in New Jersey.
The troubles at New Jersey country clubs.
That's right.
It looks like we're one for three so far.
One for three. I really hope Red Oaks becomes a show. There was a guy around the 80s again, named 80s or 90s, named Whit Stillman. He's a director. His most recent movie was called Damsels in Distress, and it had a sorority girls who thought they could solve the world's problems through choreographed dance. It was a kind of a surreal little acid college movie that I liked quite a bit. I really enjoyed it. It had Greta Gerwig, and it had the blonde woman that is married to Michael Sheen on Masters of Sex. He's a very stylish guy. Everybody's a little bit deadpan. He plays, I would say he's kind of a forerunner of Wes Anderson. He had a movie called Barcelona, Last Days of Disco, and The Metropolitans, which was about a bunch of New Yorkers who were yuppies, and I don't know. It was never my cup of tea when he was popular.
Mm-hmm.
Cosmopolitans, I guess he's going to go through different drink names or I don't know. So Cosmopolitans is about a bunch of American guys and Chloe Sevigny, who is, you know, walks on water in my book. I would take her over Mina Suvari, Randy.
What?
Good. She can actually act.
Oh. She's just amazing. I love
Bosnini, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So she is a fashion writer in Paris, and she's, you know, for, what is she, 35? And she's the old woman of the group. Everybody else is in their 20s. Adam Brody and, Adam Brody is in there.
Adam Brody's getting actually up there. He just has such a baby face.
I know. He's a little older, though. Well, the joke there is that all these American expatriate, I don't know what their jobs are, but they claim to be Parisians because they live and work in Paris. They don't speak French. They're
expats.
They look completely American. There's a scene where, you know, somebody calls a restaurant and says, "Is there an American there?" And they bring him the phone. You know, it's like, and there I was drinking my coffee and working on my notebook. So I really like that show because what's nice about it is that Whit Stillman is now an old man, and so instead of taking these guys seriously, he's looking back with a little bit softer heart at the foolishness of these yuppie guys. Instead of going, you know, I want to be in that club, he's kind of like, well, these people are stupid, you know. That's a really good show. Plus, it's beautifully shot. I love Paris, and it's just a great... Everything about it is appealing to me. You got to kind of be able to get into the cadence of the way people talk and not mind their pompousness. Chloe Sevigny brings them all down. She's there to say, aren't you from Albuquerque or Seattle or one of those kind of cities? You know, it's just, she's got the...
Is this period piece?
No, it's current.
Paris just always makes it feel...
Just feels timeless.
So it's just a drum rom-com,
yeah, I guess. Yeah, okay. Very much. And,
Doesn't sound like something that I would be interested in.
Is that an hour long or half hour?
That was just a half hour.
I can watch it.
And I have a feeling that one is already in production. I think they're going to release that one.
No, they're waiting on votes, John.
They're waiting on your votes. They're going to vote that one up.
I'd watch it just for the shots of Paris.
So call now. Yeah, exactly. Just for the shots of Paris. Exactly. The shots of Paris are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I believe Whit Stillman lives there. So he knows the ins and outs. And
that'd be cool. I mean, as an American, lives in Paris, so he can still have both like that. Obviously, being in Paris, but then also being the American in Paris,
right?
It's kind of cool. I like that.
And by the way, glad you brought that up. Before or when you dial up these shows on Amazon Prime, there's a little 2-minute behind the scenes on every one of them, and that's pretty cool. So you get a little, you know, you get to hear the stars say why they're interested and, you know, shooting the pilot. You definitely, the ones
Mina Savari's desperate, please.
The ones where you get a little bit more of the actors talking about what's so great about it.
Yeah.
Those are the ones you're going, yeah, this is already a show. The ones where you get like the guy with the microphone or the guy with the light going,
Union,
hey, they paid scale. You can kind of tell the actors have already packed up and gone back to California.
I need a job. Please vote for this.
So, the last year, there were a couple of shows that came out on there that I hope come out. One has Gael Garcia Bernal and Malcolm McDowell called Mozart in the Jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And that is about the classical music scene, the orchestra scene in New York. Also has Saffron Burroughs. Very sexy show. Has Bernadette Peters. It's just a really, really classy, great New York City show. Another called Transparent with Jeffrey Tambor. I'm going to give you a spoiler here because it's been on TV for a year already. Jeffrey Tambor, who we all know and love, is an old Jewish man who his kids are grown. He tells them that he wants to meet them because he has something to talk about. They're all saying, oh my God, he's going to sell the house. If he sells the house, he's going to spend the money. He's not going to have anything to leave to us when he dies. And they're all just being selfish and self-involved, and they're all being assholes. One of them is Gabby Hoffman.
Gabby Hoffman.
Gabby Hoffman is one of the daughters. And they're all, you kind of relate to it, though. I mean, you can't help but go, yeah, if he sells the house,
the secret given away in the title of the show?
The secret is given away in the title of the show when they walk in on him at the end. And actually, as an audience, you think that he's going to kill himself because he goes to a support group and he talks about stuff in a support group, but it's all kind of in a circle. And then at the end, they walk in, and he's not expecting them, and he's totally in drag. He's got a wig, he's got earrings, he's wearing a dress. And it's just funny to think that a guy, he's an old Jewish man who wants to be an old Jewish woman.
He's a trans.
He's a trans parent.
Ba-dum-boom.
And he's now revealing himself, so he's being a bit more transparent. Oh, the title is so brilliant.
It's like O. Henry wrote this thing. It was brilliantly done. I mean, Jeffrey Tambor is one of the most lovable character actors around, right?
Yeah.
So having him, you're automatically on his side no matter what his secret is. And then when you find that out, you go, I don't know much about that stuff, but that guy must have been miserable his whole life, you know? Like,
yeah.
No wonder he looks like shit, you know? And anyway, that's where it ends in the pilot is their discovery of him. And he looks up and says, you should have called first. So I really like that one. Okay, so those were the two winners. There was one that was kind of on the fence called Bosch, and it has our favorite smoke monster.
Titus Welliver.
One of the best names in the world that I can never remember. These are based on a series of books by somebody I don't know about a Los Angeles homicide cop. The first episode was pretty good, but you could see where they had a very limited budget. Like, there was one scene where they're in a famous restaurant, Musso and Frank's in L.A., and they're the only people in it. Clearly, they had to wait until after closing to set up and film, and they didn't have money for extras.
You can't get a couple extras to come in? That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine how you wrangle the money to shoot a pilot, especially.
Yeah.
And to get Musso and Frank's, I mean, Charlie Chaplin, Steve McQueen,
yeah.
A lot of people hung out there.
And these actors are working, but they still... I mean, he's not just doing an inspect, so he's getting some money.
Right. He makes a really good little speech about what it's like to be a cop on the beat, like, because a beat cop woman is saying how she can't wait to get promoted to be a detective, and he says, you know, you don't like, you know, hosing the puke out of your car at the end of every shift, and, you know, he just brings up all those, you know, things about cops that nobody ever wants to really acknowledge, that the kind of people that they have to deal with all the time, not just the ones they shoot. But,
it's got a good cast. I actually like this. It's got, of course, if it's got, you know, it's got Jaime Hector from The Wire and Lance.
Oh, it's got a Wire?
Of course.
Character?
Scott Wilson from Walking Dead.
Oh, okay.
He's in it too. And the woman, Annie Wershing, I think that's how you pronounce her last name. She was in the last season of 24.
Are you from the North? Washing.
I don't know.
No, I'm kidding. Maybe it is Washing. My parents say Warsh.
Yeah.
Go wash your clothes.
Yeah, Warsh.
Go wash your trousers.
Mercedes Benz.
I mean, so it's got mom and dad. I think it's got somewhat of a budget, because it got some. I mean, these are our working actors.
You can see where they spent the money. Yeah. They spent the money on their people, which is always good.
Yeah.
And he's good. I like Titus Welliver.
But they haven't made a decision on this one yet, have they?
I hope that they bring it on.
Yeah.
I do. My only thing, and it's not their fault because it's a based on a series of books, is that the cop's name is Hieronymus Bosch. So they call him Harry Bosch.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's
come
like,
on.
Yeah, that's a little on the money, right?
Oh, my gosh, Bosch. Oh my gosh.
It's like, oh, I guess Los Angeles is just some kind of a peasant hell with everybody crawling around all the time.
Yeah.
There was another one. The less said about it, the better, is called The After, and it sucked.
That was from Chris Carter from X-Files.
Yeah, that was the one that tried to be like...
all those other crappy Lost spinoffs. Yeah.
Exactly. It was if X-Files tried to have a crack baby with Lost, and it was stillborn.
It's a very unfortunate baby.
But that brings us to the big one. The one that you're either going to love it, or you're going to hate it, or you're going to hate yourself for loving it.
Okay.
And that is Hand of God. And I got to tell you, this is right up Randy Lander's alley. This really made me think of the Preacher comic book from Image... not from Image.
Vertigo.
Vertigo. That's it. Not Image. Vertigo. It's very much a Vertigo comic. You've got Ron Perlman, everybody's favorite Beast, as an old judge who's pretty corrupt. You got Andre Royo as the tongue-tied mayor. That guy has a major speech impediment. Have you ever heard him talk as an older guy. He has a major speech impediment. And he plays the mayor of this California town that I don't know what California town it's supposed to represent, but it looks like Los Angeles to me.
But one's very forgiving of a public servant's speech impairments.
Yeah. I would think that you must be for this guy. Andre Roy talking like this pretty much. I mean, he's really...
Yeah.
It's kind of surprising how...
Well, he's just, you know, his range isn't the longest range of an act.
I think he's a great character. Yeah. I just can't imagine him being elected as mayor of a great metropolitan city.
Yeah, well, as I say, he doesn't, you know, he might be trying to stretch himself.
And then Dana DeLay... Okay, this is how trashy this show is. There's one scene, Dana Delaney plays Ron Perlman's wife. Mm-hmm. She walks into the mayor's office. His bodyguard says he's in the shitter. She walks into the bathroom while he's taking a dump in the stall, and she lights a joint and talks to him while he's on the toilet. Now, this is a high-class operation when you got Dana Delaney... who has held up remarkably well. Dana Delaney smoking a joint in the mayor's bathroom and then opens the stall door and hands it to him. Oh, and while he's taking a dump, he's eating peanuts out of a bag. I mean, everything about that is so disgusting. my head wanted to explode.
But I'm horrified.
It sounded like something that you would see in a Vertigo comic.
Yeah.
So the premise here... the tragedy has already happened. The judge, Ron Perlman, his son has attempted suicide, put a bullet in his brain, because 6 months earlier, his wife was raped for an hour in front of him. She makes a point to say that he was raping me for an hour. I'm like, well, he's got some stamina for a rapist. I mean, you'd think he'd be wanting to get out of there. But, sorry, it's image. I'm just telling you how bad the show is. It's Vertigo. It's got an image. But so Ron Perlman finally goes to see his son in the hospital because his daughter wants to unplug him. And while he's standing there, a voice comes out of his son's body, and only Ron Perlman can hear it, saying, "What, you need to avenge me. You need to go find the people who did this. You need to find these people." And it's like, well, you did it. You shot yourself, right? I mean, that was your choice.
So it's the voice of God.
It's the voice of God.
Compelling him to become the Punisher.
So at some point in this, he got really drunk. And so there's a young actor who looks like the fake version of James Franco.
Gotcha.
And he... had been on the show when Dana Delaney sees him, says, "I know you from Young and the Restless." That's how much he's supposed to look like James Franco.
Wow, okay.
Now he's a preacher who had somehow or another conned the judge into giving him a check for $50,000. When the bank won't cash the check, his girlfriend...
You've lost me at this point. Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
His girlfriend bangs the banker in the in his office so that they won't hold the check for 5 days.
What are you talking about, Johnny?
I totally got lost.
I think I started hallucinating halfway through this description.
Yeah, I'm telling you, this is Under the Dome in 1 hour. Everything that Under the Dome was last year.
I think I'm insulted that you think this is a show I would like.
Oh my God! I said, well, it's right up your alley in a preacher comic kind of way.
I don't know.
I think so.
I mean, it certainly does sound like. They knew that Preacher is being developed, and they wanted to take a stab at doing something kind of similar.
Oh yeah,
They've
got a guy with a collar. I mean, he's like a minister, but he's
Preacher has so much more to it than being a guy who's an ex-preacher. I don't know,
but it sounds like
it's pretty trashy.
He's a different judge, right? He's not a preacher, he's a judge.
No, he's a judge, but the preacher is his like new right-hand man.
Okay, and they go together to try and like hunt down people
to hunt down the. People that raped the judge's daughter-in-law.
Gotcha.
And so at one point, they're trying to wake up the son that's in a coma, and the judge is poking his foot with a pocket knife.
Mm-hmm.
This is way too much.
Because that's supposed to wake him up, and he says, no, no, it's okay. This is what you do.
Is this like a pretty violent show? Do they get into some of like them actually confronting people, and it just gets brutal?
You can tell that it's going to.
Okay.
Yeah, so Garrett Dillahunt, by the way, becomes his other hired muscle guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's got a posse now.
Yeah. A preacher, an ex-con, and a judge
walk into a bar
of course. And kill everybody.
Okay. Great.
So he's poking his comatose son's foot with a knife, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden it just starts spraying blood. Blood is dripping all over the floor, and you hear his son's voice say, follow the stream.
Stop.
Follow the
stream.
So he gets on his hands and knees and follows where the blood is going.
This is ridiculous.
Who wrote this again?
I didn't say it wasn't ridiculous.
Ben Watkins is the one who wrote this.
And Ron Perlman produced it.
Of course.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy.
I don't really, if it was a show, it's very unlikely that I would watch it, but I really recommend just.
What does that mean?
I don't think I could take more than a couple of episodes of it.
Wait a second.
But if it's a show, it is a show, right?
Yeah, but I mean, if it was a series, if the Amazon Prime brothers got together and had it,
so you don't think there's much hope for this one?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying it wouldn't be my cup of tea for the long run. But for driving past a car wreck, this is the show to rubberneck on.
Okay,
and spend an hour on because. Everything that I said actually happened in the show, and yet I didn't even scratch the surface of what kind of pure trash this show is.
I certainly got a feeling for it.
Wait a second. So you referenced the Young and the Restless?
The guy that is the preacher.
For right. Franco, because James Franco was in Young and the Restless as
no,
well.
No, no, no. Well, the reason why...
Oh, the real guy was
Ben
in Young
Watkins,
and the Restless too?
The writer, producer, actor wasn't Young and the Restless. I'm thinking... Did you just?
Oh my God! It's a documentary.
Did you just pull that out of your ass, or did you? Were you reading this?
No, Dana Delaney says that to him when she sees him, and she says, "So you went from being an actor to being washed up to being a con man preacher who talked my husband out of $50,000." It's like every 5 minutes they just kind of keep repeating.
Did Ben Watkins actually convince Ron Perlman out of $50,000 to invest in the show?
Maybe that's what he got paid to be in it.
Brilliant.
So we left Sons of Anarchy for this.
Yeah.
I really can't recommend it highly enough, and yet for all the wrong reasons.
Well, yeah, I guess I might check it out because what you're saying is so wacky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It might
all of that
it.
Happens in an hour, and again, I only gave you about 10 minutes of
it. Oh, boy. So overall, what's your number one pick?
My number one pick is Cosmopolitans.
Cosmopolitans, okay.
That's my favorite one so
okay.
far.
And then
it's just
Red Oaks
so slick.
Or
and then Red Oaks is way up there. Probably, I would say, I don't know, Transparent, Jeffrey Tambor. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time walking away from a Jeffrey Tambor.
Okay.
Except for that shitty show that he did after. He has had some duds in his pipeline. Hasn't
yeah.
he? I would say Cosmopolitans would be my number one. Red Oaks would be my number two. Transparent, number three. Mozart in the Jungle, number four. Bosch, number five. And Hand of God, my personal sick fuck choice of the year.
Interesting. Well, that's good guidance, at least for me, to know what to go check out. And listeners, please tell us what you guys think of some of these. Have you guys checked them out? Are you guys interested? Is Amazon Prime just not even on your radar yet? Also, once again, please send us your emails at mail@thetvdudes.com. You can go to iTunes and give us that 5-star ranking to help us out. And let us know what you guys think about the episode in the comments below. And until next time, guys,
TV Dudes out.